The choices you make with your lifestyle, your money, every single day, influence your future. It is time to fight to make it better. This podcast is dedicated to you, to sharing ideas that you can use to take ownership of your financial future. Most Americans have little or no net worth. By being purposeful with what we earn, I know we can change that, and we must change that. I want you to learn this game. I want you to be better educated about your money. I want you to live a better life. Welcome to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Let's go. Salutations, greetings, and hello. My name is Stephen Briggs. I am Chairman and CEO of Briggs Financial Incorporated. Welcome to Money is Personal, episode 119, Navigating the Housing Market. Now, before we dive into this deep topic, I want to make sure that you subscribe to the podcast or, you know, get that latest episode on. Make sure you find us wherever your favorite podcast is: Player FM, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Spotify, and of course the Briggs Financial website, BriggsWealth.com. Also, make sure to follow us on the social medias, Facebook and Instagram. Would love to have you there. We post several times a week various tips and ideas when it comes to spending, saving, the market, and everything in between, all as a resource to help you. So check us out. We appreciate you being a part of our community. Thanks so much for checking us out today. Now, I want to dig into this, the housing market. It has been a challenging last couple of years if you have been a home buyer in particular, but even if you're selling a home, I mean, it's been a very, like I said, a very challenging market to navigate. There have been a lot of changes, not just in terms of the fact that housing overall has boomed with respect to cost, namely because there just is a lack of supply, particularly what I call tier one homes. Homes that the average American household is looking to get into. There aren't nearly as many of them as there have to be relative to the number of people needing them. Where in previous generations, you would see people, you know, older people downsizing their spaces and so on. That's not happening. And I think a big chunk of why that's not happening is for a lot of people, most of their net worth, frankly, is tied into their home. And so part of what they may be relying on is the fact that they own that thing at this point, and looking at how expensive, particularly the cost of downsizing, moving into a nursing facility, things along those lines, that is not going to be an affordable solution for a lot of people. And so this concept of aging in place means that more people are going to get older, staying in their homes as a result. And so we're not seeing a generational shift from home ownership from old individuals to younger individuals. No, older individuals are keeping those homes and staying in those spaces. So there's a real crunch when it comes to supply. And so, yeah, home prices from a year ago up 19.2% on a national basis. Even in my metro area of Chicago here, over 14%. Supply is very constrained, especially with homes under a half million. And yet what's interesting is that also a year ago, interest rates a year ago for mortgages was 2.75%. And now today, that number is nearly double at 5.25%. So, you know, and the result of that is that on higher end homes, we're actually seeing some downward pressure because the financing terms are not nearly as accommodative as they had been a year prior. Some speculative purchases, maybe trying to dump that inventory on the market. And I am seeing that. But the kick is that inventory is not in those tier one homes that most people are fighting for. And so what I want to talk about a little bit is, as a buyer, how do you think about this? As a seller, how do you think about this when it comes to home buying, your potential strategy, and how to approach a market that's kind of this way? The first thing I'll say is that the fundamentals of buying and selling a home have not vastly changed. First off, if you know that in the next couple of years, you're going to be going ahead and saying, well, I want to buy a home, but I might be moving in 2 or 3 years, then maybe this isn't the plan for you. Because there's no guarantee that housing will continue to go up and up and up, as we got to see during the financial crisis. I don't think housing is overpriced at this point, but because it has gone through many years of very slow appreciation. But what I will say is that there's no guarantee it continues to go up. So if you've got a relatively short time horizon, 2-3 years, by the way, is a short time horizon, then by the time you pay commissions and upkeep on the home and everything else, you're probably best breaking even in a good market, and at worst, you're losing money on equity. So you really got to think about, at that point, okay, this is, is this something that I can plan to stay in for several years and potentially realize that value? If not, then there's more risk in you owning that home. And the thing is, you can't guarantee that when you want to sell that there's going to be a good market for it. I mean, that's something what happened to a lot of people during the housing crisis. They bought, then the financial crisis occurred, unemployment was up, jobs were lost, and then they're looking at going, well, I can't afford the home anymore. So they're trying to sell it in a market with no buyers. And so that's a very real risk in any environment. And so to that end, making sure that you're actually planning to stay in the home and so forth and try to keep things stable for several years will help mitigate that. Second thing is to be deliberate about your mortgage size. Banks will lend you lots of money. That does not mean you have to take it. The Certified Financial Planning Board recommends that between mortgage, taxes, and so on, no more than 29% of your pre-tax income is spent on your home each month. Now, I think that I don't personally care for that benchmark. I think there are nuances and issues with it. First one being that just because, again, someone tells you they think you should spend X amount, doesn't mean you have to choose to. You may look at it and go, I want to spend considerably less than 29% of what we earn, which is more than that once you factor in the fact that that's pre-tax and not take-home. So if you think take-home, it gets worse. It's a much larger percentage of your overall, which I think is a better way to budget anyway. I think trying to do it based on pre-tax is a bit silly because your healthcare costs could increase. There are all sorts of things that could increase that would dramatically impact whether or not you can, pay the mortgage. And ultimately, it's your post-tax dollars that pay the mortgage. So in any case, what I would say is that it's you could look at it and say, you know what, I don't want to pay that much. I only want to spend, 15% or 20%. And even thinking of percentages, maybe I want a mortgage that's sub $2,000 a month. Well, that's going to constrain pricing based on whatever interest rate you're at. And I mean, that'll, and whatever taxes exist. So the higher the area is in which taxes are, property taxes are taken, the less home that you're going to be able to afford and keep in that price range and keep in that budget. Similarly, so to all of this then, it's really thinking about having a strategy in advance. When it comes to this stuff. On the flip side, I want to go back to this for a second. On the flip side, you could have, you could easily justify spending considerably more than 29% or whatever of your income if you're using your home as your primary source, for example, of entertaining people and entertainment for yourself. So, for example, my wife and I don't go to the movies incredibly often. We primarily cook at home. We don't go out to eat. We cook better than the restaurants do. So we, our home isn't just our home. It's our entertainment space. It's our, escape space. We use this space for a lot of different things and don't go out as much. Well, then that going out budget where more people historically have spent, anywhere from 6 to 18% of their income, we could justify putting back into our house. Now, to be a little bit candid, we try not to spend a ton on the mortgage either. It's not a huge percentage of our net income in our household, because we don't want the risk, if something were to disrupt the business or disrupt my wife's work or both at the same time, still being able to pay the mortgage and do a good thing. So this gets to another point, which is being prepared with a strategy for this home. I mean, and part of it, you know, during the buying process, it's easy to focus on having a down payment, getting a pre-approval letter for financing. But I'm going to point out some other things. Making sure that you have enough cash savings after the transaction. Because as soon as you get into that home and it's yours, something breaks, it's on you to fix it. Our first year living in the home we're in now together, we had a leak happen over our roof to our living room. And it was enough to have water come gushing in during a big rainstorm into the living room space. Thankfully, it was contained to that. But between repairing drywall and repairing a roof and shingles and all of that, that was a $4,000 repair. Now, thankfully, we had plenty of cash to be able to go ahead and write that check. And I'll tell you, whether you have savings or not, writing the check is no fun. That's not, we had designs of, we're going to go and redo some furniture in the living room, and we're going to put those things on hold a little bit. Because at the end of the day, yeah, we would like some newer furniture, it would have been nice, but you can't live with a leak in the roof. And not expect that to hurt your, not only the integrity of the house, but long-term value of the home as well. Not to mention living and mold and all that stuff. Like, no. So, knowing all of that, it's important to have money to be able to cover emergencies, and they can and they will come up from time to time. I kind of dislike the memes that are out there about, well, I can afford my rent and therefore I can afford a mortgage. And I'm like, mortgage, even with taxes, is only one component of the cost of a home. Repair and maintenance is a big one. And the number of systems in the home are expensive. An HVAC system is well over $10,000 to replace. A roof can easily be $10,000 or more to replace. Siding can be upwards of $30,000 to $50,000 to replace. New windows on the home can be in the $10,000 to $30,000 range very easily, depending on the size of the home. So this idea that, oh, you know, if you can afford the more rent, you can afford the mortgage. If the mortgage were the only thing you had to pay, I would agree with you. But that's not close. And if you, if and when you have a sizable bill come up like that, that's a cost you have to be ready to shoulder. And a number of people who might be able to afford rent may not be able to afford the other stuff too. But the other stuff isn't optional either. And so as a new homeowner, that's the same idea goes for you. You're looking at this going, I've got enough saved. We can put the down payment down. We can move. And I'm like, yeah, but from moving costs to, what happens if stuff breaks the moment you walk in? That happens. It happens, and you're going to have the funds to take care of that. So that needs to be part of your strategy as well. Another key thing, especially in a very aggressive market, is we're seeing a trend toward more and more buyers being willing to waive inspections, meaning, we're going to buy this house as is, and we're comfortable if there are repairs or whatever that are found, we're just going to have to deal with it ourselves. Obviously, there are definitely, there are some challenges in that. You wish that the home would be perfect the moment you walk in. If you decide that this might be in the cards or on the table, but it's a home you really, really like, maybe you end up paying for a home inspector to come with you when you go and visit homes for a day. They won't be able to obviously crawl into places, but they'd be able to eyeball with you as you're looking at a home to see, are there any issues like that are glaringly obvious, and to gain as much information as possible when you're running into an as-is situation. But the bottom line is that is a tactic that is existing. And what I want you to do is at least think about these things before you get into the negotiation. I'm not telling you, by the way, that you should waive inspection by any means, but I'm saying that I want you to have those discussions and have your plan already laid out before you ever put yourself in a situation where you're having to make decisions, because you'll have your playbook at that point. And no matter how ramped up you might be that, hey, this is the home for me and all this stuff, you can look at your playbook and go, this is what I'm actually comfortable doing or not doing, because you thought of your playbook when you weren't emotionally attached to the process or to the purchase. You have that playbook there to remind you, this is what we're doing and this is why we're doing it, to help you stay disciplined in the home buying process, as difficult as that might be. So another key exercise that I really like is, in order to whittle down what home you really, really want, making a list of, and I like three columns, and I like doing this handwritten, no typing. Have a list of needs. Needs are things that if they are not satisfied, the house is disqualified. That there is no reconsidering it. There is no going back. The answer is just no. It doesn't meet a key need. We can't buy this home. I can't buy this home. Okay. The second column are wants. Wants are really, really important things, but they are not so important as to be a deal breaker on their own. Now, you may say, I need at least half the wants on this list, and that's one of my needs. That may be true. But your wants on themselves should not be something that disqualifies the purchase. If they do, then it's a need and not a want. But going, you know, and then the third column then are what I call nice-to-haves. Nice-to-haves are just, I would call it more of a tiebreaker than anything else. So if there are a couple of homes you really like, and they hit all your needs, and they hit most of your wants, then you look at those nice-to-haves and start weighing it, and that ends up being your tiebreaker vote between house A or house B. Finally, I want to talk for a minute about financing. So you get into the deal, you go ahead, you make your offer, it gets accepted, and now you're looking, you've got the mortgage broker there wanting to get you locked in on financing. One of the key things I'm seeing in this particular year in this buying cycle so far are interest rates that are being offered in the 5.5% range, but lenders willing to sell or let you purchase what are called points or interest off of the loan. Usually that requires a substantial upfront cost, and the upfront costs have, in many cases, would require the buyer to stay in the home in excess of 4 or 5 years in order to start making money off of those point buys. So already at 4 or 5 years, that's a long time, and a lot can happen in 4 or 5 years that may make you decide that you want to move out of your home, at which point you will have lost money paying for those points. The other issue I find is that I don't think that this bond market stays where it's at forever. It's entirely possible that the Federal Reserve may not need to raise interest rates as much as the rest of the world is kind of fearing right now, essentially, which is one reason why the stock market's down right now. But when you look at that and go, they're kind of predicting that the Federal Reserve will go to 3% or 3.5% or more on the federal funds rate. I'll tell you, I don't think that's the case. If you're in the camp that, or if ultimately just flat out the Fed ends up being in the 2 to 2.5% camp, well, what's interesting is that we actually have a relatively recent data point of when that was true, which is 2019. In 2019, when the federal funds rate was in that range at 2.25%, 30-year mortgages were going for 4.375, 4.375% instead of 5.5%. So if you get your mortgage at 5.5%, and then you later you see those rates drop down to that level, you can pursue a refinancing of your mortgage and potentially save a lot of money doing that percentage buy down, or percentage drop down as a result of the refinancing. On the flip side, if you already buy the points, so if let's say you buy points to go from 5.5% to 5.25%, if rates drop to 4.375, that's real on the edge of whether or not refinancing the loan will actually save you more money. Because they do charge for it. You do have to pay the mortgage broker to do that. So this is where I look at, what's going on overall here. And I'm okay with the 5.5% interest rate, not buying down the points, but leaving a much wider opening to take advantage of a refi later on that could save me considerable amounts of money without having to commit to buying points when I may or may not be in the home for, you know, the time it takes to recoup those dollars, basically. Now, if you're a seller, what are some things that you should be considering? Well, first thing I would say is that make sure you, you know, as you're preparing your home, don't spend on things that you don't need to sell your home. It's a seller's market, big time. So feeling this desire to go and redo a bunch of stuff, I'm sure the new home buyer will appreciate it, but you will not make more dollars that way. You go and put a new kitchen for someone else, that's great, but that's not going to add, generally speaking, home repairs and home upgrades are not on their own going to add dollar value to the property. I do think, however, giving your house curb appeal at a reasonable price makes a great deal of sense. Making sure that if rooms are particularly polarizing in color, getting a fresh coat of paint so the buyer can have a better chance of seeing how this house might be their house. That's kind of the point. But doing basic cleaning as well, removing things that might smell like pet in some way, shape, or form. Basically, I mean, you're not going to get 100 cents on the dollar on any upgrade for your house. So looking at that as, oh, this is an investment in the home. No, not really. Like I said, it can help, and it will be, you know, likely be worth something to do things. But the expectation that you're going to get that, or the HGTV, you're going to get more as a result of doing that thing than not, is fairly, it doesn't meet reality. I do like the, again, going back to the idea of going with, you know, freshening the home and making sure it's clean and the landscaping out front and so on. I think that's really important because in this business, the first impression is the only impression. They get one shot to walk through your home along with whatever they've seen on Zillow or Redfin or wherever they're getting, their information. They get one shot to look through your home, make it your best shot, make it the best impression possible. And then the other thing is that when you're selling, you're probably also a home buyer as well. So again, this comes down to having a strategy for timing when you're selling your home, when you're looking to buy in. If you're selling your home and let's say the transactions don't line up, you could do what's called a lease buyback, meaning that you end up renting the space from the new homeowners for a month or two to give you time to move out and to get into your new house before they move into the place that you're selling. That's possible. Another possibility would be that you end up loading the truck up and going somewhere and living with family members or with friends for a month or two, and then loading the moving truck back up again to make the final trek to whatever your home actually will finally be. This can be both energy, cost, time-consuming, because you're essentially performing a double move. But you should have that as a contingency anyway, because if you sell your home, and even if you find a home, buy it, you're under contract, something happens and you have to cancel that deal, you should have a plan B for what happens, because at the end of the day, if your house closes, you need to be out of there. And if you're if that's not an option, in terms of like a lease buyback or something, you at least need to have that playbook in mind of, okay, so where are we going to go? And that might be, where is our stuff going to go? Where is our family going to go, especially if you've got kids? Like, it's important to have that game plan in place well before you get into the idea of, I'm going to sell a home, we're going to buy a home or trade up or do whatever. Because at the end of the day, you're going to be, you're in the heat of the moment of those decisions. Having done some pre-thinking in advance will help you make more objective decisions about what you need to do, and it's going to help you keep your stress level and anxiety level tamped down because you're prepared to respond to the questions that may potentially come up. So you notice I've hammered on this idea of being prepared in terms of mental process and priorities and so on. That's a key to this whole thing. Whether you're a buyer, whether you're a seller, having a good strategy and playbook in place is so important to have success with respect to the home buying and selling processes. And so that would be my biggest encouragement to you, is to think about these different ideas when it comes to your budget and personal finances, when it comes to having a strategy going into negotiation, when it comes to knowing that the home actually is going to meet all of your needs and most of your wants, and is it, you know, what makes a spot a good spot. And then also recognizing that these sort of things can have an outsized impact on, you know, if I make a bad decision during financing, then I may be put myself in a position where I can't take advantage of a bond market that is that's cooled off a bit, and being able to reduce the interest rate on the mortgage considerably. You may lose some or all of that window by doing things like buying points at a time where doing that's pretty expensive. So with that, I want to thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Money is Personal. You can catch all 118 other episodes at BriggsWealth.com, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Spotify, Player FM, iHeartRadio. Like us, follow us on Facebook, Instagram. And we thank you just so much for being with us here today. We appreciate you. And if you have any questions, or if there's a particular topic for an episode you'd love to hear, reach out to us, Steven, Steven, at BriggsWealth.com, and I'll be happy to help out. So with that, I hope you have a fantastic week. Be safe, be well, and we'll catch you with a fresh episode next week. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Please follow Briggs Financial on Instagram and Facebook for more terrific personal financial stories and ideas. And check out our firm's website at www.briggswealth.com to schedule a free consultation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This information is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Briggs Financial believes the information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but does not guarantee the accuracy of the information being provided. This information is not meant to be a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making financial or investment decisions, and does not constitute a recommendation. Please note that the information provided may include references to concepts that have legal, accounting, and tax implications. It is not to be construed as legal, accounting, or tax advice, and is provided as general information to you to assist in understanding the issues discussed. This information is not meant as financial or investment advice pertaining to your personal situation. The selection of appropriate investment or planning options and/or strategies should be made on an individual basis after consultation with appropriate legal, tax, or financial advisors. Nothing contained herein is intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any product or service mentioned, and they may not be suitable for all investors.